Cosmos Science, news, magazine, podcasts, video and features.
It was just another day in the office when the call came in. Just as I was pouring myself breakfast. What's your question?
Why do animals come in so many different colours and patterns?
Good question. This is a case for science detectives. Get me, Emma Perfetto.
I'm on the case. I'm Emma Perfetto, and this is Science Detectives, a podcast where we investigate the big and small questions in science. Today's question is from Olivia Henry. And we're investigating how and why animals come in different colours and patterns. The animal kingdom is awash with colour and pattern, from the black and white striped zebras galloping across Africa to the dazzlingly blue Ulysses butterfly, or the bright and splotchy poison dart frogs of the Americas. Animal coloration spans the rainbow. But how do they produce these dazzling displays? And why? To get to the bottom of the mystery, we first need to get the facts right about colour and how we see it.
Case files.
Okay, so what do we think we know about how we see colours? Well, I'm pretty sure that when light hits the back of our eyes, it interacts with special cells called cones. And that's why we see colour. I've heard that humans have three types of cone cells, but other animals can have different types and different numbers of them. So colour vision can vary a lot between species. I think how we perceive other animals isn't necessarily the same way they do. But really, we need to talk to an expert to find out for sure. And who better to answer this question than someone who studies animal coloration for a job?
My name's Debbie Stewart-Fox, and I'm a professor of evolution and ecology at the University of Melbourne.
First, Debbie told me about pigments. These are chemicals produced by living organisms that absorb certain wavelengths of light. For example, red pigment absorbs everything except the red wavelengths of light. That's how you get a red panda, for example.
They have to acquire those pigments in different ways. So some pigments they can produce, but some pigments they have to acquire from their diet.
Like flamingos. They aren't born with their pretty pink feathers. Instead, they accumulate a red-orange pigment called beta-carotene from the high concentrations found in their diet.
So animals acquire those pigments from the diet, and then they have to sequester them into their feathers or their fur or their, well, not fur. Mammals are really boring. They've just got melanin. But they sequester them into their feathers or skin for different animals. Melanin is the key. It's found universally, you know, from insects and all sorts of invertebrates. It's a really fundamental molecule, really. And it produces that black to brown, even sometimes reddy browns, different types of melanins. And it plays a really important role in protection from ultraviolet damage.
So, melanin pigments are produced by a specialised group of cells called melanocytes. They protect us and other animals from UV damage by absorbing and converting it into harmless heat. Now, back to that red panda. For us to see the dashing red colour, it has to be embedded in a material.
You can't have a pigment alone producing colour, because something's got to reflect, you know, those red wavelengths, and it's a material. It's always some structure, some material that reflects the light. So I like to think you can have purely structural colours, but you can't have a purely pigment-based colour. It's always a pigment embedded in a structure or embedded in a material, and that material is reflecting the wavelengths that are not absorbed.
Wait a second. Debbie said something really interesting there. What does she mean by you can have purely structural colours?
There's a whole class of colours, perhaps even the majority of colours, that are not produced by pigments, but by nanometer scale, like tiny, tiny structures within feathers or skin or within the, you know, the cuticle of a beetle or butterfly wings. And they have to be tiny because they're structures that are on the scale of wavelengths of light, and they interact with light and they can, you know, magnify some wavelengths to produce really bright and really intense colours, more intense than you'd ever get from pigments. And they can produce these amazing optical effects like pearly colours, metallic colours, mirror-like colours.
So pigments were a bit of a red herring. These colourful structures are usually made from chitin or keratin. Each time the light reaches a boundary between that material and another, like air, it gets reflected.
And if there are many of these structures, all of the wavelengths that are reflected can add together, and that's why the colours appear really intense. So we call that constructive interference. Or some wavelengths can cancel each other out. And so only some wavelengths are reflected, others not at all. So it might be an intense blue that you see, you know, because you don't, none of the red wavelengths will be reflected, for example.
So now we know how animals produce their colours and patterns. But why do it at all? Well, coloration and patterns can play defensive roles, like camouflage, for instance. This is a tactic that animals use to disguise their appearance and mask their location, identity, and movement. Some animals do this through visual illusions, like stripes.
Some color patterns help to trick predators when prey are moving. Stripes are a really good example because moving stripes make, when you've got a stripy pattern and it's moving, then it's a lot harder to accurately work out speed and distance and direction for stripy moving animals. So it's called motion dazzle. You know, zebras are the classic example. If you've got a herd of zebras and they're stripy and they're all moving, there's a herd of zebras, so it's difficult to tell where one zebra starts and the other one ends, you know. It also really messes with predators' perception of speed and direction. So a lot of fast-moving animals actually employ stripes.
Another fast-moving African animal pops into mind. Cheetahs. They don't necessarily have to be camouflaged from other predators, but they must be able to sneak up on their prey.
And so a lot of those predators will rely on stealth to get close to their prey. They've got to be super stealthy and super camouflaged. So there are, I mean, like the tiger patterns and the cheetah spots, they really help blend into a kind of dappled grassland, a complex dappled kind of background. And we think that they're orange, you know, but a lot of mammals don't see red. So it actually blends in the colour as well.
Animals can even combine different strategies. So in the case that one fails, another one can kick in, like a startle display.
When they've been spotted, their camouflage has been broken, perhaps they've had to move or the predator's, you know, got that search image and picks out that moth, then they'll open their cryptically coloured wings and reveal these really bright eye spots or these really bright conspicuous colours. And that startle can be enough to just make the predator pause for long enough for the prey to get away. And, you know, that's the difference between life and death.
Another example could be a red and black striped snake, which from a distance blurs to a brown. The snake can actually appear quite camouflaged from further away, but up close, that red and black pattern can signal that they're pretty unpalatable. This is known as a warning coloration, and it's a way to communicate with other animals. Predators learn from visual cues that prey is toxic, so they don't attack in the first place.
And it's easier for predators to make that association, to learn that association between, you know, this is not good to eat, if there are bright colours involved. Because they're bright colours and they're really stimulating, we find it easier to learn those associations. It's the same for humans and it's the same for many other animals, actually.
Colours and patterns also play important roles in communication between animals of the same species.
Then there's, of course, showing off and having these lovely bright colours and ornaments for courtship or to intimidate rivals.
This is why in most species, though certainly not all, males are often more colourful or ornamented than the females.
In most species, the males are the sex that are competing for matings. And that's because a female's usually got a limited number of eggs, limited number of offspring that she can produce. And what matters to her is survival and getting enough food to produce all of those offspring. Whereas for males, they can fertilize a very large number of eggs. They're not so much limited by their access to resources, but competing for access to those females. And so they have tended to evolve more weapons, more ornaments to help them in that competition for mates, basically.
So, did we solve the case? Why do animals come in so many different colours and patterns? They use a bunch of methods to produce their beautiful coloration, from creating or obtaining pigments from their diets and sequestering them in their tissues, to producing tiny nanoscale structures on their surfaces that interfere with light. Some even produce and emit their own light, called bioluminescence, from chemical reactions in their bodies. And there are many reasons why animals have evolved their colours and patterns. They can even be important for regulating body temperature. Sunlight is energy, and dark colours absorb more of that energy than lighter colours, which reflect more. So, animals that need to warm up quickly will often have very dark bodies, like high-altitude butterflies, for instance, that need to reach a high body temperature to be able to fly. That's it for this episode of Science Detectives, a podcast from Cosmos. If you enjoyed this podcast, we'd love it if you could drop us a rating and a review on your favourite podcast app. It helps to get more interesting science to more people. We've also popped some links on more animal science in the description of this episode for you to check out. If you have any questions you'd like the Science Detectives to solve, send an email to ask@cosmosmagazine.com. This episode of Science Detectives was presented by me, Emma Perfetto. Production by Andrew Wirral. Science Detectives is a podcast from Cosmos. For more science news, check out cosmosmagazine.com.